and welcome. You're listening to Strange New England, and I'm your host, Tom Burby. The strange, dark legacy of Hiram Maxim and the Devil's Paintbrush. Here's a quick question that will make you wonder. Which son of Maine has affected more lives upon the planet than any other? Seems like a silly idea, really, perhaps because there is no way to answer such a subjective question. In the arts, we have Stephen King, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and Edwin Arlington Robinson. In sports, we have Louis Sakalexis, Cindy Blodgett, and Joan Benoit. Our political influence includes Lincoln's first vice president, Hannibal Hamlin, the hero of Little Round Top, Joshua Chamberlain, and Margaret Chase Smith. For inventors, though, I believe there is a clear choice. Yes, Milton Bradley was born in Vienna, Maine. He invented a ton of games we still play and was the first person to print kindergarten materials in the country. Yes, we have Chester Greenwood, our beloved inventor of the earmuff. We even have Alvin Lombard, who invented the rolling track we see on snowmobiles and tanks. Of course, we can't forget L.L. Bean, the fellow who ultimately invented a waterproof boot. But to say that any of these inventors' creations changed the world for the majority of humans on the planet might be forcing the issue. There is one man, however, whose life changed the world for almost everyone. His contribution impacted people's lives so intensely, so devastatingly, that many will never be able to forget or even to forgive him. His name is Hiram Maxim. During his time on Earth, he was responsible for over 221 patents. Named a knight by Queen Victoria and knighted by King Edward, he was a friend of royalty and world leaders alike. H.G. Wells was his friend. He knew and he spent time with the Wright brothers. His patents include curling irons, amusement park rides, steam pumps, light bulbs, and flying machines, all fairly important and mostly benign inventions, making the world a better place. So what on earth could this inventor from Sangerville, Maine, have created that links him so inextricably with human suffering and bloody death? The same invention that links him inextricably with national defense and sovereignty. Hiram Maxim is the inventor of the first portable, fully automatic, self-loading and self-firing machine gun. How a poor boy from the wilds of Maine could have invented such a device, and how he rose to such prominence, is a fascinating tale, a true Horatio Alger story. Born in a humble shack by the side of the road near a brook at Brockway's Mills, Maine, Hiram began life as the son of a poor farmer, and found as he grew that he was good at working with his hands, tinkering, and making things work. Born in 1840, he and his brother Hudson lived in the wilds of the northern woods and found that hunting, fishing, and farming were his main interests. There wasn't much else to do. He was adept with his hands and the use of tools. One day, he and his brother stood on a boulder at the edge of the family farm in Sangerville and looked out at the wide world, each vowing that one day they would be successful and wealthy men, a vow that ultimately saw fruition. At 14, he apprenticed out to a carriage maker in East Corinth and was a handy hand at small boat building, too. He invented a new mousetrap that kept the gristmill in Abbott free from vermin. But Maine was too humble and quiet a place for his roaming mind, and he left it to move to Fitchburg, Massachusetts, to work at his uncle's machine works. During his time there, he found work as a draftsman and an instrument maker, and it seemed that nothing he put his mind to eluded him. He disliked working with others and found solace, usually in situations where he was the one ultimately in charge. That often meant working alone. When the Civil War broke out, Hiram refused to enlist. He wouldn't become involved in that conflagration for moral reasons. He didn't believe in war as a way to solve humanity's problems. How strange that in years to come, in the war to end all wars, his contribution would lead to more casualties than any other human on the planet. His brother Hudson Maxim was a skilled inventor in his own right, but his specialty was explosives, and he put his considerable talent to the task of solving one of the most perplexing problems of modern war. At the time, gunpowder produced a cloud of impenetrable white on the field, and very soon after the firing commenced, confusion ensued. Soldiers could barely see the person next to them, let alone the enemy 100 yards away. The gunpowder also left heavy residue that would gum up the workings of the mechanism. The government was eager to find a replacement for the old recipe for gunpowder, one that would give them the advantage on any battlefield. Hudson delivered, and we do not know how much he was assisted by his brother Hiram, but there was a major falling out between them over the patent. Hudson had the greater knowledge when it came to chemicals and ordnance, but when the patent was applied for from the patent office, the applicant only wrote the name H. Maxim on the form. Hiram claimed smokeless gunpowder for his own. Hudson disagreed, claiming that he was the rightful inventor. Though we never know, of course, which of the two brothers created smokeless powder, or how much each contributed, it was enough to split the two men apart for the rest of their lives. Shortly after this, Hiram Maxim left the shores of America to work for the U.S. Electric Lighting Company in London. He found life in Britain very much to his liking, and he would eventually give up his United States citizenship to become a naturalized British citizen. His fortunes grew, as did his creativity. He created the world's first automatic sprinkler system that not only put out the fire, but notified the local firehouse, though, strangely, there was little commercial interest in the invention at the time. Riveting machines, inventions that prevented the rolling of ships at sea, and pine menthol inhalers to assist those with asthma were all ideas he brought to the world. He dabbled and tinkered and was generally successful, but he was still restless and nowhere near as wealthy as he would like to be. But then, in 1882, he met another expatriate while visiting Vienna, Austria, who gave him a piece of advice that he claimed made him invent his gun. He said to Hiram, "Hang your chemistry and electricity. If you want to make a pile of money, invent something that'll enable these Europeans to cut each other's throats with greater facility." It was the seed that grew into a nightmare. Maxim lived in a rather palatial country house at the time in West Norwood, and it was there that he threw his considerable talents to the task of creating an efficient killing machine, one that would eventually make him fabulously wealthy and famous. The Gatling gun, invented for the Union Army during the American Civil War by Richard Gatling, was the world's best-known rapid-fire weapon, though not its only one. Its cyclical nature meant that the barrels did not overheat, as long as it wasn't fired any higher than a certain rate. Perhaps its most problematic issue was that it was extremely heavy, and once in place, it tended to stay there for the duration of the battle. Something lighter and faster was in Maxim's mind. Hiram Maxim had spent his youth hunting bears in the Maine woods, and he recalled the kickback that the large-caliber rifles gave his young shoulder whenever he fired. His genius lay in the idea that the force of the kickback, if properly harnessed, might be used to load the next bullet. It might even be used to have the gun actually fire itself, in effect, pulling its own trigger. The new smokeless powder that he may or may not have had a hand inventing, meant almost no gumming up of the mechanism. And with the later addition of a water jacket to act as a radiator of heat for the barrel, Hiram Maxim found himself the proud inventor of a rifle that was capable of firing bullets over and over again with accuracy until the bullets ran out. Maxim founded his company based upon the promise of this new weapon. With financial backing from railroad tycoon and steel foundry owner Edward Vickers, Maxim, Son, and Vickers began creating the gun in the mid-1880s. The American friend's advice had been sound. European governments bought so many automatic machine guns that the foundry ran day and night. Though he lost credit for the invention of the light bulb to Thomas Edison, he would now forever be remembered as the man who single-handedly created the automatic rifle. Hiram Maxim had made the fortune and gained the fame that he and his brother vowed to achieve long ago on the boulder on the edge of their property in Sangerville, Maine. Now, in June of 1890, the tall, white-haired, and nearly deaf inventor found his way back to his roots. He returned to the place where he grew up to meet with friends and show the folks how he'd fared in life. He brought one of his automatic rifles with him. Word of this visit quickly circulated, and a rather large crowd gathered on the June day on the hill looking down on Dexter's Lake Wassakeag. His aim was a demonstration of his invention to the locals. But this would also notably be the first time an automatic self-loading modern machine gun would be fired anywhere in North America. With a grateful crowd's silence, he announced that he would discharge the weapon first, and then others could have a shot at it. All was ready. He gently squeezed the trigger, pointing the weapon at the same spot on the ground without moving it, effectively digging a hole. The gun fired at a rate of 666 shots a minute, a truly coincidental number for an invention that would later be called the Devil's Paintbrush. Then he told the audience to imagine an army trying to run up at them from the edge of the lake. He squeezed the trigger again, but this time he swept the aim of the weapon back and forth along the shore, shots ringing, water splashing, clods of dirt flung high into the air. One gun, he claimed, could lay an invading force low very quickly. Though it hadn't yet been used in battle, his prediction was frighteningly accurate. Next, he asked for a Mrs. Bryant to come try her hand at the machine gun. The old lady was the oldest person present from the town of Dexter. Then his cousin Caroline Maximtrue had her turn at the trigger. And then the show was over. He informed the crowd that it was expensive to fire the damn thing, costing him over $14 a minute. He traveled the landscape of his youth for another week or so before returning to England, where in 1900 Queen Victoria would recommend him for a knighthood, though it was her son Edward who would eventually knight the boy from Sangerville. His weapon had proven itself in the Russo-Japanese War and several smaller British conflicts. Those in power who had possession of the new weapon were confident that it would give them the advantage in the next conflict. Soon enough, the Great War would begin. Since his machine gun had been in service for over 25 years, it had been made and copied over and over again by other arms factories throughout Europe and America. Variants of the Maxim gun were used by both sides in World War I. Though his invention would be used by the ground troops extensively, it would be attached to the newly invented tank and to the aircraft flying the skies above the lines. How does one calculate the amount of human carnage caused by a weapon that could also cut down trees? How many of the 9 million combatants and 8 million civilian casualties of that war died from a bullet fired from a Maxim-designed gun? One need only look at the Battle of the Somme. On the first day of that battle, over 60,000 men died, 85% of them by machine gun fire. The other battles follow suit. Some historians have subtitled World War I as the Machine Gun War. The boy from Sangerville, who as a lad had designed a mousetrap that rid the mill and abbot entirely of its infestation, was the man who made it possible for the nations of Europe to embark upon wholesale slaughter on the battlefield. Most of the deaths of World War I can be directly attributed to machine gun fire, and of course, to man's blind indifference to his fellow man. Few human beings have been responsible in some way for the deaths of millions of people. Even fewer in this group can honestly say they actually never killed a single human being with their own hands. However, how culpable should society hold the person who created the means by which literally millions died? Though he may never have pulled the trigger, this man could be called directly responsible for creating the means by which millions have met their ends. As he sat at his table sipping his coffee and reading the lists of the fallen from his morning paper in West Norwood, did he ever cast his mind back to the quiet, tranquil setting of Sangerville, Maine? Did he recall with pleasure how he hunted deer and bear, and did it ever concern him that his invention was at that moment taking the lives of millions? We'll never know. Maxim, after all, was a man of his times, and he was a power player. It's easy to think that he had no qualms at all about his invention. He might have liked the modern adage, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Sir Hiram Maxim died in his adopted homeland at Streathen on November 24th, 1916, at the age of 77. The only formal education he ever had was from 5 years in the one-room schoolhouse of Sangerville, but his informal education made him the epitome of the term damned Yankee. It can be easily argued that no other son of Maine has ever affected the world to the extent that this one man has with his creative mind and his gift of the automatic weapon, also known as the Devil's Paintbrush. You've been listening to Strange New England.